to Twig 279, where we read and distill all the weekly game industry news so you don't have to. I am your host, Jen Donahoe, strategic marketing consultant at Beta Hat and Jade Inferno. So today we have, as usual, Philip Black, game economist at Game Economist Consulting.
Hey, hey.
Eric Kress, principal at Gossamer Consulting Group and back to life, not sick anymore.
I'm alive. I'm alive. It was a week of pain. The whole family was just decimated.
And Mishka, the Pope, Emperor, and President of Deconstructor of Fun is out this week. So Laura Taranto, Senior Director of Product at Big Fish.
Can I be like the queen or something?
Oh.
Can I be queen of something?
You don't want anything to do with Mishka. You don't want to be a part of that.
It's a rotten empire.
I got one.
The emperor has no clothes, so to speak.
Queen of Product Deep Dives at Deconstructor
of
Fun.
There we go.
There you go.
Yeah. It's
a better title.
Spot on branding right there by your resident marketer. Anyway, so here's what we got for you today. We thought we would be done talking Embracer, but nope. We have a lot to talk about. Sadly, you're going to have to just put up with us. Supercell Squadbusters is out in soft launch. Phil has thoughts. Royal Kingdom has re-soft launched. I guess that's a thing now. And we'll talk about what changed. And a little bit about celebrity collaboration history. And if there's a future with celebrity collaboration. So, guys, you must be excited. Amazon greenlit a second season of Fallout. I am personally a Last of Us fan. In a Fallout versus Last of Us post-apocalyptic TV battle royale, who wins? Who wins in this battle?
All right, Last of Us for sure. I mean, come on. I don't know if there's any comparison, right? That show is amazing. I think it's much more engaging, like dark, scary. I think the whole thing is thing. I think Fallout's a great streaming show, and it's a great like shout out to the fiction. I would say. I think someone said this last week, but. It should have been released over a period of time. It should not have been just dumped on us, right? I think it would have gotten a lot more bang for its buck and have a much more longer term impact if they had like extended it over a month or so. But they're both great. The fact that these adaptations of games are good is great for gaming and this whole transmedia muckety muck baloney, right? I mean, yeah. No, it's not. But like, okay, again, like we said last week, like Fallout,
yeah.
The game is not going to be out for another fucking 8-10 years. So exactly. Yes. How does this help? Right.
I agree with you there. I have been in my feed. People have been telling me Fallout is better than Last of Us. And I think they have radiation poisoning. Like what on earth could beat Last of Us is Phil, what are your thoughts?
I don't know. Whichever one makes the most money. And right now, Fallout has so many more monetizable elements. It's like, it's hard to monetize Last of Us. It's such as like a serious drama. An IP is way better. You can multi-franchise, multiple series in development at once. Deeper pockets. I'm on Team Fallout.
Okay.
Oh, all right. Okay. That's all right. So.
Good point.
I hear you there. So, Phil, why don't you shill for us? I think you've got a couple things.
Yes. So Brett Novak, friend of the podcast and also the owner of Liquid and Grit, and I are doing a monthly economic roundtable. We had like a little bit of fun a couple of months ago when we did it. And so we've decided to make it a regular thing, reach out to him for an invite. And also we're going to be talking about Marvel Snap. And I'm going to be responding, I guess, to Eric, your podcast that you have with Matt. But there's a lot of claims flying around when you guys were talking about how aggressive they're willing to be when it comes to monetization. I still find them lacking quite a bit. They haven't solved a lot of their card distribution problems. They said they were fearless in their ability to monetize, but like they removed loot boxes from the game and soft launch. There's just a lot that game is trying to figure out right now, and it deserves a deeper dive, and I'm happy to do it tomorrow. So reach out to Brett for more info.
But this was my point on the podcast, right? I mean, that was my criticism to him. I called him out on it. I'm like, dude, this game was not aggressive enough on monetization, right?
Oh, I totally agree. I think his answers weren't satisfactory, though. I think they don't match the evidence. They don't match the evidence. Like, they pulled back from loot boxes. That's a clear Reddit retraction.
Okay, this arm was here, and the other arm was here, and that's exactly what he could say. You know what I'm saying? Now that we're on YouTube, I'm using visual. Like, you want to see the fucking shit? Come on YouTube, right? Anyway, yeah, no. I mean, I want to just put them over the coals on this shit, right? Because you're right. This game was like a huge missed opportunity, like in the most extreme way. And yeah, it's because they have the mentality of Blizzard, right? They have that kind of like
Well, they don't know free-to-play. They don't know free-to-play.
They don't. And there was a GDC talk that's kind of gone under the radar by one of their senior directors of product about how to design a CCG without loot boxes. And just to be clear, like, Marvel Snap does have loot boxes. You know, they just call them different things and they give them out in collection level. But, like, that talk has kind of gone under the radar and I think deserves more conversation. And I haven't seen it myself. I'm hopping into it tonight. But I know that's hopefully going to address some of the things that we'll be talking about tomorrow. So I'm happy to bring insights from that talk, too.
And also on a personal level, a shout out to Brett. I went out to watch his son play basketball, and his son is like this little tiny skinny kid. But dude, the kid shoots like Curry. I mean, it's unbelievable. Like the skills that these kids have at these levels, he's like a fifth grader. Okay. And like, he's really, really into it. He wears the bandana. He's got the whole thing going, right? And the kid can just shoot, you know. This is how bored I am. This weekend, my kid doesn't have any basketball. I'm going out to see other parents' kids' basketball games. But no, I wanted to hang out with Brett. Anyway, shout out to Brett and his son.
Well, I'm going to keep the Brett train going because I actually recorded a Liquid and Grit roundtable last week. So we covered App Store featuring, UA Creative fail ads, the Clash Royale chess.com collaboration. So the link is posted in the Deconstructor Fund promotions tab. I can, you know, rebump that up as well, or reach out to Brett Nowak, and it's Nowak. He is in the channel, obviously on LinkedIn as well. So the final shill is, I wish Miska was here so I could give him some shit in all of the best ways about his most recent interview that just launched. So he was promoting it on LinkedIn, and he leads it into the promotion with this. For over a decade, I believe that product comes before marketing. I was wrong.
What?
Where is he? This is what he says. Why does he never say this on the podcast? He has to go meet with this actually, you know, really well-known agency called Bond. The whole episode is about how they rebranded Merge Gardens. So rebranding is a little bit of a misnomer. I think they did a lot of the character updates, the setting, and while sometimes that can transition into the marketing assets, they kind of rebranded the inside of the game, and they drove a lot of like success with that. So external agencies can actually help some game teams. And he talks a little bit about how Supercell actually used a lot of agencies like this on the side, quietly on the side for over a decade. So good podcast to go check out. So no corrections to
Well, actually, there are some corrections on this whole Andreessen thing. I don't know exactly what it is yet. So I'm going to find out later today because someone reached out and said, hey, dude, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about what with Andreessen. I don't think it's actually going to make Andreessen look any better. I think it's going to make them look worse. I imagine it has something to do with the fact that the money that they're suggesting that they have, they don't have, and that they may actually not have that kind of money yet. Like, but
okay.
I did get a message literally an hour after the podcast dropped from Andreessen saying, tell me what you really think. You know, so it's like, well, I mean, but no real retort on what I was saying, but more like, Jesus, dude, why don't you call me before you rip us a new one, right? I'm actually out next week because I'm at Epic, but I will be back the following week, and hopefully I can give you guys some kind of correction on my nonsense about...
Okay. I didn't think you ripped them, but I think in you qualified some of the things that you said. You're like, I might be over my skis on this. But so, yeah, let's talk about that. It's interesting. They have an A16Z podcast where Andrew Chen, who leads games, interviewed, you know, Andreessen Horowitz, and they talked about, like, you know, this investment, the $600 million that they're putting in the games and what they're really thinking about the intersection of games and technology. So it was kind of interesting just to hear kind of their perspective on what they want to do and where they're focusing on that. It's the speedrun thing that I'm just curious about, especially because people keep asking me of, you know, what the value is of that.
Again,
okay.
Anybody that's been doing venture capital for a long period of time, and I just listened to another podcast with some OGs, they're just like, these funds are ridiculous in size. Like, these don't meet, this is not a venture capital fund anymore. You know, that's the whole main point of this, is like, there's so much supply of funds for this that they are making investments that are not venture anymore, right? So that's the main kind of theme that I'm hearing out there.
Maybe we should have a guest
Yeah, we
somebody
should.
Somebody who is an expert. Okay, let's do that. Let's schedule that. All right. Going into quick hits from an overall standpoint. So there's a new article about Apple Arcade in The Guardian today. Today is Wednesday, by the way, April 24th. But to spare you hearing about Embracer and Apple Arcade for the 10th time from us, I'm just going to post the link in the channel. You can kind of go in. It's Apple's team defending a lot of their strategy and talking about how they're seeing success. So nobody say anything. We're going to just move on. All right. So this is kind of an interesting topic, and I debated on bringing it up, but the reason why I want to bring it up is because I think that we have a lot of founders here who have to do employment contracts. So in the U.S., the Federal Trade Commission issued a rule to promote competition by banning non-competes nationwide, protecting the fundamental freedom of workers to change jobs, increasing innovation, and fostering new business formation. So there are a couple of states in the U.S., California being one of them, where California actually doesn't uphold non-competes anyway, but you know, all of the companies that are here do it. So
just this morning, basically the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and business groups filed another lawsuit seeking to block the ban on non-competes. So this is kicking off a huge legal battle between two different groups of constituents. And I will say this is our friends in Canada at the Great White North, they actually legitimately enforce non-compete agreements, as far as I understand it. This was a huge issue for some of the Ubisoft guys over the years in terms of their capability of moving from one place to another. I don't know if that's still the case, but they enforced it. At least in California, it was never enforceable, right?
Yeah.
King does this too. It's really annoying. It's a European thing. There's like this 3-month, what they call a King vacation, because you still get paid during your 3-month non-compete. But that's 6 months after you hand in a 3-month notice period in Europe, which Americans, I'm sure your jaw is dropping. 3 months and then another 3 months for the non-competes. You'd be out for 6 months before you take another job. I mean, that is a really sluggish labor market. It could not be more European. I want to see this in Europe, not over here in the States. I don't think this is going to do much. California was everything anyways, and this was already there.
I heard Supercell gives a year. But I don't know. I might be wrong. Who knows? But I think when I read into this a little bit, what I didn't realize is that if you make a salary over $151,000, the non-competes, they don't apply. So the idea is that the lower level folks should not be held to a non-compete because they should be able to go freely. But if you're an executive and you have the resources to negotiate your contract, you're going to be held to that, except in, obviously, California, where it doesn't matter. And so I was like, well, that's a little bit unfair. $151,000 in California is kind of like director level, senior manager level jobs. Like when the government does these things, it doesn't often make a ton of sense. But I think they're taking a step in the right direction. All right, moving on. More government stuff. It's going to be the government episode for the U.S. So TikTok, the House and Senate have just passed a bill which ironically was funding for wars with Ukraine and for Israel, but snuck in there was a divestment clause. It's often called a ban of TikTok in the United States. So the language is that the Chinese government will have to let TikTok be sold in, I don't know, 200 something days, under a year, or it will be banned from the US app stores. Crest, did I get that right?
I think so. And my understanding is that ByteDance, the Chinese company is not willing to do that. So this, in essence, could be a ban on TikTok. I'm not crying.
It's a big deal.
Oh, yeah. I'm not losing any sleep over it, but like, I know that it's not a very popular idea. So we'll see. We'll see. And again, over skis, right? I don't know. Who knows where the wind's going to blow on this politically? And it's, you know, very political. So you don't really know what the ultimate thing is going to be. Maybe the Chinese decide that it's okay in some way, depending on the structure. But the people that I was talking to at GDC were basically, there's just no way that TikTok will ever do that.
We'll keep an eye on that. Biden is expected to sign that into law this week. So the clock will start ticking. Also,
that was a good one. The clock will start tick-tocking.
Yep. Yeah, that was a good pun. Yeah, that was good.
I finally give a pun that you approve of? Oh my God.
You didn't do it intentionally, unfortunately.
Oh, that's true. Oh, that's true. You hate when I do it intentionally. Okay. I've been chatting with Matt Piscatella from Circana/NPD. So he was really generous. He's like, do you guys have any questions for us? And I threw him like 10 things. And so the one that he gave us some data was Helldivers 2. I was curious how this was doing on an engagement standpoint. All his data is US only, but I'm just always curious to know, especially for these PC console folks, what's going on. He says that it's not growing in terms of DAU in the US, but it's holding pretty well. Steam is still seeing above 13% of DAU compared to around 4% of PS5 active. So this has been pretty steady for over a month. It's come down a bit from the first few weeks where it was trending at 23 to 28% of Steam actives and just shy of 10% of PS5 actives through late Feb to mid-March. So solid retention overall, but there's some signs of slowing. So thank you, Matt, for giving us this data. I'm going to bug him about, I think Fortnite is the one he's going to give us a little bit more on next in the long list of things that I've asked him to do. So in the world of collabs, we're going to talk a little bit about this later, but there are a couple I wanted to highlight up front. Fortnite announced the next musical guest. It's kind of like Saturday Night Live, where it's like, who's going to be on next? Billie Eilish is going to be the next musical guest coming on after, what was it, Slim Shady?
Eminem.
Yeah. With Marshmallow. Eminem. Why did I forget Eminem? I'm like, Slim Shady. Yeah. The in-game concert. Yes, Billie Eilish is up next. And then because I'm playing Travel Town and I am a huge fan, they're partnering with the Great British Bake Off, which is hilarious. I love this.
Brand integrations have gone too far.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. You know, it's crazy, but it's really fun and it's well done and it's adorable to see kind of the characters come to life. All right, Laura.
All right, I'm covering investments in M&A. So we have Sweden-based games developer Modern Times Group has acquired US-based game developer Auto Attack Games via its subsidiary Ninja Kiwi. And does anyone else remember Bloons from way back when?
Yeah. I think that's at the Apple Arcade Hospice these days.
This acquisition will enable Ninja Kiwi and Auto Attack to collaborate on developing future tower defense games. And it's mostly Auto Attack is primarily known for Legion tower defense modes and a successful transition to Legion Tower Defense 2. US-based Web3 games developer Avalon Corp has raised $10 million in a funding round led by Bitcraft and Hashed to fuel development of its debut title. AI-supported UGC MMORPG Avalon, which aims to unite Web2 and Web3 gaming aspects. They previously raised $13 million back in February 2023. I kind of put this in because it had so many acronyms, and I was like, oh, they're covering all the bases.
The world's first VR NFTs right on their website.
VR, NFT, Web2, Web3. Blockchain, AI, UGC.
Bingo!
Was this really all in one press release? Dude, Bitcraft is working fucking overtime right now, man. Jesus Christ. Holy crap. I haven't even heard of these guys. I'll have to look into this amazing game that's going to bring all these things together. They didn't say transmedia, though. So.
Oh, that's next. That's I mean, you have to hold some powder dry for your next press release.
That's correct. What could go wrong?
Last one, Turkey-based mobile developer Mage Games has secured $3.5 million in funding led by Ektera. Did I pronounce that correctly? So the investment will be used for the game development process. The company will be focused on competitive mobile PvP games. I had just a quick look at their LinkedIn. There's a lot of interesting companies and developers that are based in Turkey, so I'm curious to see what they come out with. They usually, most of the founders and C-levels have worked together before at a company called Massimo, which had a lot of kind of smaller PvP games, social games. So I did look to see if they came from Peak. I was wondering if they'd come from Peak, and they had not.
Cool. This isn't on there, but Chris, did you see, first of all, Atari is still around, didn't realize this, and that they wanted to bring back the publishing arm called, was it Infogrames?
Dude, that's old school shit, right? I did see that.
Yeah, like, why?
I did. I mean, if they're trying to build a publishing org, I mean, I think there is some nostalgia between the old school guys. I've actually recently in the last couple of weeks, I've been talking to a lot of the kind of like Steam, like PC based game developers. And they're all kind of like that, where they have this nostalgia for the, the old labels. And I think Infogrames is just one of those things. It's like super old school. And if they want to build a publishing org, why not use an IP that they have as opposed to publishing it under Atari, which I think has a different connotation, right?
Yeah, fair point. I felt really old when I read that. I was like, oh, yeah, I remember that. I'm like, oh, no. I guess that people on the podcast listening would probably, because I think we skew a little older.
Well, not the mobile guys. The mobile guys don't know fuck all.
The mobile guys are like, what? Yeah,
let's move on. They're thinking.
Yeah. Yeah, they're like, God damn you all.
You've heard of Heroic Labs by now, and we keep talking about them because in today's mature market, you need every edge to be successful. Rather than spending those precious company dollars on building game tech, focus on building your game and shipping it. Get into your players' hands faster and grow your community. Heroic Labs is battle-tested partner and friend of the podcast. Their tech enables you to be flexible, creative, and scale for success. Heroic Labs has your tech stack covered. Whether you're looking for a world-class back-end game server, an amazing game development framework, fantastic live ops tooling, or reliable mass scalability, Heroic Labs has solutions for all of these challenges. And it's not just us at Deconstructor of Fun praising Heroic Labs. The company works with some of the world's biggest publishers on many of the beloved games. Focus on your game, save a big chunk of cheese, and avoid tech risks with Heroic Labs. This podcast is brought to you by Data AI. Now, you're asking, didn't they get acquired by Sensor Tower? They did, and that's awesome. Here's why. Whether you loved using data.ai or Sensor Tower, the combined company will offer customers even stronger and more detailed insights on the full digital customer journey. Exciting times lie ahead as Sensor Tower and Data AI join forces. Go to data.ai or sensortower.com and get on board with undeniably the best data partner in the business. Now, back to the episode.
So let's talk games, Phil.
Larian Studios, the makers of Baldur's Gate 3, is working on, they're working on two new original games. And the studio founder said in a note that this is an exciting opportunity to develop our own IPs. And they have two new projects and couldn't be more excited about what's in store. So I guess don't look at a lot of DLC support for Baldur's Gate 3. Neil Long of Mobile Gamer Biz reports that Apple-approved game emulator Delta hits 3 million downloads in 4 days. This looks like a Game Boy. When you've seen screenshots of it, you can load ROMs. It's clearly a violation of a million different IP laws, but like, this could not be easier if you're a Nintendo. Build that and sell it. You know, just let me buy the old games. Like, this could not be easier. Just put a Game Boy on the damn phone. Like, it's consistent with your principle. Ugh, frustrating. Just have them go in and they could own this market. Buildbox 4 launches with no-code AI game generation creation engine. That's from VentureBeat. A lot of no-code AI UGC tools. An update on some of the titles we've been covering. AFK Journey appears to have stabilized. On a daily basis, it's looking at around 500,000 users, and it's doing around 600,000 per day on 70,000 downloads. So we could be looking at maybe $200 million, $250 million run rate. If you think about the PCQ and the web stores, let's see if it continues to hold. All of the metrics seem to be steady, so it looks like it could have really found a steady state. Warzone, still not looking the greatest. It is stabilizing a little bit. Revenue's still pretty weak relative to downloads and relative to active users. I think this could be maybe a $50 million a year product. It doesn't look that ambitious in terms of what it can do in terms of growth. I mean, they're always going to tell you that like you could transfer your cosmetics from the HD version. So it's tricky to attribute revenue to the SKU because you could be getting a purchase on the PC and it could be driven by mobile player. At least that's the executive PowerPoint.
That's exactly what they're going to say in the press release too. Like I can already see it being written.
Incremental revenue. I'll guarantee you their game economist team has not looked at that metric. Another Monopoly Go update, their softness in weekly active users. It's down from a peak of 8 million in September 2023 to 6 million as recently as last week. That's a 25% decline. Downloads are softening. We go from 1 million a week right now, and it's down from a high of 2.5 million in September. Revenue still growing though. Still reaching some ambitious heights. So it looks like they're stacking customers. They're going through a bunch of downloads. They're acquiring customers. They're sticking to the game.
Are they stacking customers or stacking spend?
Well, if they're stacking customers, I think that will lead to increases in revenue. I think that's why we've seen revenue grow, is that the percentage of players who have purchased at some point prior during that week, I think that number is growing.
Mm. So you're converting more people, even though the overall pie is lower. We used to track DAC, daily active customers at Scopely.
Yep. Yep, I put those reports together.
Yeah, I would make the argument that they're likely getting more spend from their existing payers instead of getting new payers.
I think they're growing.
Really?
I think if you looked at daily active customers, weekly active users, I'm sure that they are growing over time. And like those are the people that are likely to convert when you run sales, when you run live ops events.
But you just said that they're down 25% from an MAU perspective.
Weekly.
And a weekly active user, but that's different than customer. Customers are stickier than users by a long shot.
I see.
They have much higher retention rates.
Oh, okay. So okay. I see what you're saying. They're customer. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I got it.
Even though the pie is lower on the audience coming in, they're converting more.
I wouldn't even
spenders.
Say that. You can just hold that constant. Like the absolute number of daily active customers are increasing in the game as they continue to just churn through downloads because their retention rates are so high for customers.
Okay. All right.
It will peak at some point for sure, but I think it's still growing.
I will allow it for now.
Okay. But. Okay, we can debate this in the future. Thank God Fallout numbers have peaked on Steam. They're finally on the decline. We're done hearing these press releases about like another metric out. It's finally over. I do think like there's still some shrapnel we should sort through in terms about whether or not this stuff makes sense and under what conditions it makes sense. Like I think you were alluding to, Jen, last week, like there's timing that matters here. I mean, this is the whole idea of like a movie game, but the constraints are costly. So those are trade-offs. I definitely think we should talk about that in the future because I don't think these are not done. We're going to see more and more of these articles come out.
Yeah,
every time there's a transmedia project.
I got a lot of folks supporting me in the argument that I had with you all at the beginning. It's actually just our banter. We were arguing and you guys were shitting on transmedia. And I was saying, well, it's a long-term play. It's a franchise plan. It's a brand building activity. It's multiple lines of business, how you extend your IP into various sections. That's where you can really win. And they're like, well, you kind of said it, Jen, but you didn't play into it. So maybe we do have a transmedia section where we go into it. Funny enough, Barry Dorff from Hasbro just announced that they just did a deal for Clue, and Clue is coming out on a TV show and a movie, which it's not necessarily video game transmedia, but you know, from a licensing perspective. And God, do you guys remember the original Clue? I said, how many endings are you gonna have in the TV show and the movie? Anyone remember that movie had like three endings when you guys were 5 years old?
And no one's copied it because it gets you repeat going. So I want to see every ending, you know, multiply ticket times the number of endings, Mass Effect could have learned something.
Yeah. There's a lot of good things to do with franchise extension. Perhaps the brand, maybe we need to rebrand transmedia and call it franchise planning or franchise management, where content happens to be a pillar in the overall approach to how you develop your franchise. Because transmedia, I think with you all, has a bad taste in your mouth, and maybe I just need to rebrand that.
I don't think that's how it works. That's called window dressing.
That's why, so rebranding is what you would call window dressing. Like that's when we change the wording of something to make you think differently about the same thing.
Yeah, no, I know your bag of tricks.
So my objection to transmedia, generally speaking, is that to think that one team can do it all. That's my biggest problem with transmedia.
Agreed.
The fact that Ubisoft thinks that their fucking Assassin's Creed team can make a game, make a mobile game, make a movie, make a TV series is just bullshit. It's absolute bullshit. That's why it drives me insane if you see a VC pitch or a company pitch talking about transmedia. You can't do it all. The skill set of making a game is different from making a movie, is different from making a TV show, is different from making a mobile game, right? AAA and mobile. So that's what bothers me about it. It's because if the word is just used in that way, so flippantly. On the flip side, like clearly we're seeing evidence of transmedia things working in the marketplace, but they're being done by distinct groups of people at the most asinine times, right? Like, Fallout show coming out without a game coming out in like 20 years from now is like ridiculous. Like that's not a transmedia strategy. That is just a brand strategy. So I kind of actually appreciate the fact that you can, you know, rename it, and that makes it make more sense to me. So that's kind of my.
You are absolutely correct. So let me be like 100% clear on why Last of Us worked. So the creative director of the game went and found an absolute genius TV show creative director. He did Chernobyl. If you didn't see Chernobyl on HBO, just great fantastic show. The creative director of the show, and I'm sorry, I'm forgetting their names. He was a fan of the game. So you had the game the game creative director, who's a fan of the guy who made this other great show and vice versa, they went and they mind melded, to use a Star Trek term, and made a fantastic piece of creative for TV, because the game guy let the TV guy take the reins and do what needs to be done for the medium of television. That's how you have success. The problem in the past with transmedia, from video game to TV show, has been exactly what you're saying. These like egotistical video game guys thinking that they know how to make any other type of creative in another medium. And you don't. You have to hand over the reins. You have to build a brand Bible and say, this is the essence, and let me give you some feedback. But you got to let the experts do their thing. And it's vice versa to video games as well, which is why there's always a lot of pain at Disney. The movie guys want to tell the game guys what to do. And the game guys are like, fuck you. You don't know how to make a game. So you have to let the experts have their creative freedom, which is why Barbie worked. That's exactly why the Barbie movie worked, is Mattel was like, hands off. They're like, okay, here's what you got to do to make Barbie Barbie. But hey, Greta, you know, Gerwig and Margot Robbie, you go do your thing. So, sorry, I didn't.
I feel like
to...
you've basically also covered the gist of these celebrity IP integrations for games, because it's the same message. It's literally the same message.
Extremely similar, except for you are a little bit more lasered in to one persona and one person's brand, which can be polarizing, but we'll hit that later. First, guess what we're going to talk about, everybody? Embracer. All right, let me give a recap, Chris, before you lose your shit. Okay, here we go. So this is the topic that won't just die. It's just going to split into three different stories, like those creepy kind of worm experiments you do when you're in middle school and you cut the worm and it like grows back. So Embracer announced that it's splitting into three groups. One of them, Asmodee, is the tabletop game publisher, and it's not even a video game division. And ironically, this was the 2.75 euro billion, or however you say that, acquisition, that was what pushed Embracer kind of over the edge into debt the first time, that kind of tipped the scales on all of this happening. So as a reminder, Embracer has already laid off more than 1,000 people. They sold off Saber Interactive and Gearbox. All of this was also sparked by the collapse of the Savvy deal, which was a $2 billion investment deal with Savvy. So, Chris, talk to us a little bit more about these three groups, and I can't wait. Yeah. I'm going to get my popcorn.
Look, I'm really, really, really sorry, Mr. Adam Telfer. We have to cover Embracer again. Unavoidable. I don't want to. I even struggled to get through the press release. I was like, much less than listening to this coverage. It's painful, dude. It is fucking painful. So basically what's happening is they're splitting it up to three publicly traded companies, which, first of all, fuck the fuck off, right? I mean, it shouldn't be one publicly traded company, much less three. But anyway, all right, moving on. All right. Asmodee is the board game publisher with 14.8 billion krona, sorry. Coffee Stain and Friends, a publishing entity which will focus on indie and AA titles and free-to-play titles across PC and console, with revenues around 10 billion. I don't believe these EBIT numbers, so I'm not even going to quote them. Middle Earth Enterprises and Friends, focusing on development and publishing of AAA titles, which includes The Lord of the Rings, Tomb Raider IPs, with revenues of 14 billion. That also includes their AAA studios, right? Like Crystal Dynamics. With the creation of these three separate entities, they will distribute shares in both Asmodee and Coffee Stain and Friends to existing shareholders of Embracer. So every shareholder of Embracer will get those shares. And then the existing entity will be basically the Middle Earth Enterprises. So the AAA game developer. Does that all make sense so far?
I guess.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
As much as possible.
So I kind of decided that I was not going to cover this. And I was going to let other people speak for me. There's only so much I can like pat myself on the back about being right about this that I could do without...
So
sounding
gross.
Like an asshole, which I am an asshole, I know. But the one insight that I will use before I go to others on the internet is that by separating Asmodee, they were able to actually secure another fucking round of financing of 900 million euro to pay down their existing debt. And this is likely impossible under the combined entity because they're not fucking profitable, right? So because Asmodee in a standalone is profitable, it makes it easier for them to raise this level of debt. And the other thing is that this removes, in theory, the debt from, or the majority of the debt from the other two groups and puts it all under Asmodee, which is the only really predictably profitable business, although a business that doesn't grow at all, but they sell fucking board games, right? So it's like a 20% margin business, something around those lines, right? So this likely actually, and kind of has provided a little bit of a valuation uptick, because separating them, actually the value of the parts is greater than the value of the entire organization. It also gives them the possibility of selling the pieces, right? Which may actually unlock value, because interested parties don't want the fuck anything to do with goddamn Asmodee. They don't want, like, Savvy doesn't want to own a fucking board game business, like that kind of thing, right? So, okay. And so anyway, so that may actually help them sell that, something like that, to Savvy down the line. And the other thing that you have to keep in mind is this is going to be years. It's going to take years for this shit to happen. This is not going to happen overnight, evidently. And that is painful. And so what I promise to everyone on this podcast is that unless these guys get sold, I'm not talking about it anymore.
Oh, I love that promise. Yes. So Lars, the CEO of Embracer, he gave an interview to GameIndustry.biz. And so just, I think there's another one running today, but I wanted to pull a quote just to set you off, because it's pretty funny. So as a leader and an owner, sometimes you need to take the blame and you need to be humble about if you've made mistakes and if you could have done something differently. So when he asked what his mistakes were, I would probably say listen to Eric Kress on all the past podcasts, but he didn't get into specifics. Instead, referencing a long list of things he and Embracer Group could have done differently, but standing by the company's overall strategy. In any given moment, you are making decisions you believe are right. No shit, of course you are. When we were at the peak in 20 and 21, we made all those decisions to acquire or organically set up or invest, and everyone was backing that. I firmly believed in that. The outcome, because it takes a number of years to make games, is different and it's painful, and we need to adapt to it. This is, I mean, I don't know. Like, it's not really saying you made a mistake. It's saying—
What is the strategy? I don't understand.
I don't
this.
Either.
What is it he keeps referring to?
Okay. That was just not a genuine statement. Like, you cannot consolidate 133 studios in a few years. Like, that's not the way the business works. Like, anyone that's managed a studio for more than a couple of years realizes that that's fucking impossible. That strategy does not make sense fundamentally in this business. Full stop, right?
Let's hear what some other people had to say. I think they've heard from us enough. So I think you went and found some good quotes.
Okay, here we go. The kind of funny game kind of sums it up pretty perfectly. It's like Embracer unembraces Embracer. I like it. Nice play on words. That's true, right? Patrick from Goodbody. Now, this is more of an academic. Ultimately, the Embracer buy and build model was a failure, drove inefficiencies and competition between subsidiaries, and is not overly surprising to see the strategic shift post the group restructuring plans. The pace of aggressive expansion through M&A was simply too fast and lacked strategic cohesion and integration. The split of the group is a natural consequence of these events. The propositions that already had support and at discounted valuations, and also left doubts the group ability to meet financial commitments over the medium term. Yes, that is the appropriate way of responding to this instead of what I do, okay?
I think even internal folks have been showing support, like on LinkedIn or other places. I think even the folks that work at these companies are like, okay, finally, this is a good move for us.
Yost, he had a very pleasant way of saying something in his way. Is he Swedish?
No, he's Dutch.
He's Dutch.
Clearly, yeah. The Swedish gaming conglomerate was struggling in its form as a federation of different projects and properties. It means is that every studio has to help pay the debt the mothership has accumulated by making so many acquisitions. That's unsustainable. It's a distraction from the creative process and destroys capital assets like talent and goodwill. Yeah, I like that. That was good. And finally, this one. It's like taking a big turd and cutting it up into three smaller turds. Now, I didn't say this, and I think it's a bit childish, but accurate. So that's all for me. I swear, that's all for me on a bracer until something gets sold, right? And I think it's definitely possible that the AAA thing will get sold at some point.
So here's my thing. Like, I get all the ranting, but like, what does this mean for Stillfront, for MTG, all these other roll-up companies? What is the strategy? What was the thesis here to begin with? Like, everyone has referred to like Lars's thesis and that he's focused on the mission. I just don't understand what any of that is besides just dribble. What is the mission? Why do these things work? I don't get it. Are they just arbitraging stuff? Like, what was the strategy to begin with? Is that what they say it is?
I always go back to the Jurassic Park quote. I don't even know if it's actually that relevant here, but I'm going to say it again. People were too focused on whether they could versus whether they should, you know? So when you have unlimited funds and unlimited money to do whatever the fuck you wanted to, it was like money was like coming off of trees, then these type of things make sense because you could just, it's like a Ponzi. It's like you just keep buying, growing. Until everyone realizes that you can't actually grow organically. That's the whole point of this type of exercise, is to get a bunch of assets and grow organically. But that's fucking impossible when you're trying to manage 133 fucking studios. You know, it's impossible, right, to do that. So the problem with Stillfront and Embracer has always been the fact that they have no central publishing, no central tech. The problem is, I believe in the city-state model, but the state has to have the capability of publishing and managing and getting projects out on time. You need that infrastructure to help support that. And then,
amen.
Yes. And then you start buying shit that's completely out of scope, like Lord of the Rings and Asmodee, which never fucking made sense from the get-go, which I've talked about on the podcast a million times. And you're paying extraordinary prices. You know, the valuations just went absolutely apeshit above what anybody else would pay. And so, anyway, ultimately, it just collapses upon itself when the money's not free anymore.
So does that mean Stillfront's out the door then?
Yes.
Is that what you'd predict as well?
Look,
and MTG?
I don't know much about MTG. Stillfront, I think, was a little bit more selective and a little bit smarter about how they invested. But still, they bought teams that were not capable of building products. That's why they haven't grown organically forever, right? So I think there's still a problem. I think the second question is, why does it work for acquisitions for big publishers like EA? You know, I mean, you could say that EA is a collection of acquisitions. It's because they buy these acquisitions and integrate them over long periods of time. Like when we bought Maxis back in the day, it took like 4 or 5 years to get a fucking game out of these guys. You know, SimCity was the first game, and then The Sims really started taking off, right? Or DICE, it took forever. I mean, we got that thing for steel. Like, I think it was a couple hundred million, and that thing took forever to get them. And then DreamWorks was Medal of Honor. Like, and then there's a ton of failures too. But like, yeah, it takes time to integrate these studios. It takes time to get them kind of on track, making shit and building organic growth.
Yeah, I plus one that. I lived through a lot of the, you know, the EA city-state model. And I think that the challenge they had here is like, hey, we're going to collect a bunch of these like star athletes and put them on a team and just let them go and we're going to win. Well, you can't actually do that. You'll have a failure of a team unless you build a training facility and hire fancy chefs and get them all fancy coaches and build the support infrastructure to kind of make that work. So it looks like the companies that, you know, failed to create this, you know, aren't able to set up that central service. And love it or hate it, this is what EA has always done really well. And this is the 2Ks, the companies that bring everyone in, set up the central service, set up central publishing. That's how you can win at this. Not, I'm going to just buy a bunch of people, you know, and like you said, kind of like a multi-level marketing scheme, like a pyramid scheme, and just hope that works. If by letting them do what they already do, you're not being more efficient in doing that.
The games industry is experiencing unprecedented growth, with global revenues projected to reach a staggering $268 billion by 2025. But with more players than ever connecting across platforms and devices, how can your game stand out against the competition? AppsFlyer has created AppsFlyer for Games to help you unlock your players' true LTV by providing a wealth of game measurement solutions, unique industry insights, and proven best practices. Our dedicated hub is packed with innovative products, industry partnerships, and unrivaled expertise to ensure your game game brand adapts and thrives. We understand that every game is unique, and AppsFlyer's data-driven insights allow us to cater to your specific needs. We know that in today's evolving landscape, staying ahead of the curve is crucial. Trust in AppsFlyer for games to guide you through this exciting journey. We have the tools, the knowledge, and the passion to help you succeed in this ever-expanding landscape. Together, we'll conquer new worlds, both real and fantasy, break records, and create gaming experiences that leave a lasting impact. Get in touch with AppsFlyer for games today and unleash your game's true potential. AppsFlyer for games, supercharging the gaming landscape. Hey game devs, are you tired of dealing with complicated payment processes all over the world? Well, Exola's got your back with Exola PayStation. It has a simple, user-friendly interface that makes it easy for players to pay for your games and in-game content however they want. And because the Exola PayStation user interface is adaptive and accessible on smartphones, tablets, and PCs, your players will have a seamless experience no matter their preferred device. Players can save their favorite payment methods for future purchases, and on mobile, even charge purchases directly to their phone carrier bill. On the back end, you can customize your checkout with game-specific integration options like sidebars and iframes, as well as change colors, fonts, and images to make PayStation look and feel like a natural part of your game. Ready to see Exola's PayStation in action? Visit exola.pro/payments-dof or visit the link in this podcast description.
We're going to move on to a company that is actually trying to launch its first new game since 2018. So Squadbusters is out. Is it Supercell's next big hit? Let me just do a quick recap before Phil jumps in. So Squadbusters is in soft launch in Canada, Denmark, Spain, Mexico, Norway, Sweden, Finland, and Singapore. And it's actually topping the charts in all of the countries. So as of yesterday, it was the number one app, not just game, but number one app, which includes non-gaming apps in Canada, Finland, and Spain. And it ranks inside the top five in all the remaining countries except for Mexico, where it's at number 18. So as a reminder, this game is a multiplayer squad building action game. I don't know what that means, but you know, Phil will tell you more. And it features the characters from all of the Supercell games. So I got a chance to watch the launch trailer. It's out. It's a really fun 2D animated. So that means they spent a little bit less money. It's okay. They're in soft launch. So I'll allow it. And it was kind of like a multiverse romp. So it starts on the Heyday chicken, which was just freaking brilliant. The chicken with the eyes that kind of like goes in different directions. And it really set the tone in the right way that this is kind of a funny cross-brand gathering of all of these different characters. It felt like every League of Legends team battle video I've ever seen. You know, characters that don't look like they should be teaming up, and then they battle another group of characters that looks like them. So it's tough to recreate the wheel on that, but from a Supercell game, I guess it's kind of cute. So fun trailer. All right, Phil, you want to do a little bit deeper dive on the game?
I will leave a 4-line review. There's so much we could talk about. I'm sure we're not done talking about Squadbusters. What I will say first is find someone who loves haptic feedback as much as the designer of Squadbusters does, because, oh my God, your phone is going to light up. Someone just went ham on the haptic feedback. The next thing I'll say is that rarely have I had this much fun with a roguelike on mobile. And this actually reminds me where Theorycraft is going, which is a Supercell spinoff. One of the EPs of League just basically took the whole leadership team and is making a battle royale right now, which I think they just announced that they're going into alpha. But they're trying to do something with this MOBA, this kind of MOBA battle royale space. The roguelikes we know are huge on Steam. This whole idea of in-round progression, you're getting items, you can do theory crafting. That's a word I've used with a bunch of clients recently, theory crafting. There's a lot of fun, like tantalizing possibilities you can have when it's combined with randomness. And this is Supercell's, I think, look at taking a shot at that on mobile, which is different than Clash Mini. Clash Mini was taking a shot on a failed genre, which was auto chess, which has never really sparked anywhere besides China and for one SKU. Underlords, which was the Valve equivalent, never really sparked in China. So like, hey, let's go back to the Supercell thesis of like taking popular mechanics and refining them. The next thing I'll say is that the win condition needs work. I think this game still has like a lot to go in terms of development. I heard that this was the one that was farthest along. I think Ilka had mentioned that once. I really did not think that was the case playing through this. I actually think this is going to take quite a bit of time to get to global, but there's so much to optimize here. There's such a vast design space in what they've created. And the last thing I'll say is, like, Supercell just has like a best in class creative. Always, always. It is amazing to me how every time I pick up a Supercell product, there's a certain guarantee of quality, and that hasn't gone away, you know, as they've scaled. The soundtrack is different. The announcer is incredible. The gem collection sounds, chest upgrades. It is so much fun just to like touch a Supercell product, and that's never gone away. And I'm just super happy to see that here. Certainly not the last time we'll cover Squad Busters. Hopefully we can do a deeper dive. But you know, there's something here. But I to be honest with you, I wasn't as convinced as I thought it would be. You know, with all the internal hype around this product. But I think there's so much to optimize, and this team's gonna have an absolute blast doing it.
Laura, thoughts?
It's not in a country where I can download the game. So I was watching the video. I need to wait to play it. All I can see is watch streamers try to play it, and it's not the same as playing it yourself. It looks very similar to the beta, though. So release in Australia, Supercell. Release in Australia.
You have to set up an account in Canada or something like that.
Oh, I need a bank account, a Canadian bank account.
Yeah. I watched a bunch of streamers playing, and it is difficult to understand when you watching someone else, because you have a character and you collect your squad, right? You collect these characters that become your little army that run around you. And when you watch that on a screen, it is very difficult. I don't even know how, if I was controlling it, how I know which one is me and my squad of, I guess you're in the middle of this circle that moves around. And Phil, by the way, Fight for the Golden Spatula, which is TFT in China, is a top 10 revenue driving SKU even today. So don't forget that. Yep. But you are right. From an auto chess standpoint, it's a one and done. Highlander, the one to rule them all, is now the basically TFT in China. All right. Anything else on Squad Busters before we move on? Laura's going to take us through what Dreams Royal Match, or sorry, Royal Match, Royal Kingdom, Royal Kingdom is doing in their new soft launch update.
I was gonna, okay, since we're doing the video now, I was gonna try a screen share so you can see the game.
Let's do it.
Okay, I hope this doesn't fall flat on its face, but let's give it a go. Fun. I'll give some context first, and then I'll get really excited talking about it. So Dream Games, that we all know and love for Royal Match, they released an update to Royal Kingdom, which is what I have showing. And I have to say, it did include a full reset of all progress from version one of the game. So I did receive some rewards to ease the blow, but I lost all my progress from the first version of Royal Kingdom. There are only 100 levels. I almost threw my phone against the wall yesterday because I was like, I'm going to get as far as I can. And then I got stopped at 101 and thrown to the Champions Arena, which is their end of content. I mean, looking at it, if you played the pre-version, it looks almost the same. Now, what's different are there's three things that I found that are different. They changed the social aspect of the basically what the previous or the social attack levels, and they basically changed the look and feel. They removed the aspect of you're attacking your friends or another player, and they put in basically an NPC. So now you are attacking an NPC. And on top of that, they changed a little bit of the gameplay where it's not just you're attacking the castles, you actually have obstacles in these levels. So they think of like an obstacle that you find in your level. It's now, I'll show a video of it, but it's now something that adds an element of chance and a little bit more of a challenge to these Dark King levels is what they're called. They did simplify their economy, mostly visually. So they're hiding kind of XP outputs that they were showing before. And they're definitely reducing some of the rewards over playtime. So potions, which you can see in the upper right-hand corner, that's your renovation resource. And the previous version of the game tied it, I believe, to win streak. And so if you had a win streak, you would be earning more potions, progressing faster in the game. That seems to have been removed. And then the last thing, which I can show here, is the world expansion. In the first version of the game, you kind of have this beautiful, I mean, I loved this. I thought this was really different from what was in market for a renovator. They added like all these worlds you can now renovate. So this is completely new. Instead of, you know, you're fixing your one kingdom, you have all of these kingdoms that you can go and change. And I think it adds a lot of visual variety. And it also absolutely extends your ability to progress and stay in the game. So this is a video recording of what the kingdom level or Dark King level looks like. Yeah. So you can see here, you have these little golems. That's the new obstacle that they added. Otherwise, it's very similar.
This is almost like Clash Quest.
Yeah.
Looks like a puzzle RPG. This gave me
Supercell vibes. Yeah. So you basically attack them. There's different sizes of golems there. I imagine this has to be version one. This has to be basically a very... The first part of what I hope to see are a lot more changes. So minus this, what you can see, the games kind of look and feel the same. The marketability is similar. So I assume it's going to attract this kind of the similar audience to Royal Match. So I have to check their UA creative. Unless they're kind of leaning into the attack levels, I didn't think this was a play to expand their audience. That was what was a question mark for me.
You don't think the skew's male?
Yeah,
like this looks like more of a male, more of attack.
This looks puzzle RPG for sure.
Yeah,
sure. But this is level 10, right? So it depends what they're using to bring players into the game. So are they going to use what you see is kind of like, it depends how, if they're going to just do the level ads, which is, you know, save the king.
No, you have to do different creative.
Exactly. So that's what I need to take a look at is look at their creative and see if they're actually using these NPC levels to bring in a different audience. Otherwise, if you look at the two games, they're very, very similar still.
Mm.
They're operating the number one game in the world right now, which is unbelievable. They've grown it over time. They have to see something to make this worth it, because this just feels like a distraction to me. Like, continue to operate your main product. Like, what is it? What is the vertical that they feel like they're adding here? And I'm with you. I don't see it. They're starting to play with more PvP loops. What we only have like one success there. That's kind of more of a muted. What was it? Is the Israeli company? I forget what they're called.
Matchmasters?
No. Matchmasters, thank you.
Yeah. Candyboar, yeah.
Yes. It sounds like very light RPG mechanics. I guess that screams male and deeper ARPU curves to me, but they don't have characters.
This is not that PvP, though. I would have thought they would have gone into social. That is a theme. Mishka did an interview. The VC from Leighton Ventures was talking about he sees the trend of social is going to be the cornerstone of games going forward, and they ripped that out of this. I love Dream. This was a question. I could not understand the play here, except for the levels. And that's going to, Jen, it's going to be your team figuring out, well, how are we going to use this to bring in players?
Yes. So having worked on puzzle RPG category a lot, they painted themselves a little bit into a corner in that they're not enough of one or the other to be meaningful to a consumer base. So you either need to lean in to the casual aspect of it. And like you said, they already dominate in that casual aspect to attract a match player, or you need to lean into the, I'm a puzzle RPG with guilds and with, you know, all of the systems that you would get into that to attract a slightly different player, which tends to be, you know, the RPG player. What you're showing me right now looks like it isn't appealing to either one of those and looks tough. So as your marketing partner on that, I'd be like, oh, shit. what? I mean, I guess I would lean into what you just showed, which were kind of the puzzle RPG where you've got kind of adventure on the top, puzzle on the bottom, kind of like a mullet. This game is the mullet of, that's what we're going to call this. Royal Kingdom is the mullet of games right now. So maybe we do a deep dive on it and spend a little bit more time. But that's kind of my first impression is, problem.
I'm hoping that I'm just going to wait because there must be more coming. There has to be more coming. That's my hypothesis. So Dream, let's see what else you got. I want to see more in Royal Kingdom.
As I've said many times, there seems to be an insatiable demand for match games. So perhaps they can get another one going.
It never ends.
It never ends. Like, it's unbelievable. Who would have thought like back in the day of Bejeweled, you know, on that we would be... That'd be like billions with a B spent on puzzle games, on match games.
I know.
Nuts.
Multiple companies with multiple games making billions, not even just one dominating them all, right? Like, this is not the Highlander type of category. This is so many people
can do. There
must
be some kind of psychological thing, right? With fucking puzzle games for Americans or, you know, Westerners, right? I mean, you don't see this kind of fucking activity in Asia. Right? There's no puzzle games in Japan, right? It's all in the US.
What are you talking about? There's a ton of RPG ones. What are you
talking about? Puzzles and Dragons?
Sorry. You're right. The casual shit. Maybe you're right. Maybe it is universal. How about China? You see anything in there?
Mana Pop. by Happy Elements. It's 10 years old, still doing incredibly well.
For all right. Maybe it.
Everything else has struggled to break in.
It's a human phenomenon that is related to puzzle. It's crazy.
I love it.
Matching is fun.
Yeah. Matching is fun.
Matching is
super satisfying.
Tell your kids.
You know, I think it goes back to the dopa hit, right? Like, you're getting dopa hit after dopa hit. And this is why, if I were to do a deep dive on Royal Match with a psychologist, that would be a fun project, is it is so satisfying when you see you match something and then your entire thing like blows up and you send propellers everywhere. It just, there's something that I think is a psychological dopamine release that makes these things work over and
very manageable economy. Very manageable economy, very sustainable. Everyone knows what the monetization playbook looks like. Extra moves, boosters, done, ship. Like, not a lot of baggage you have to manage to. Keep these things going forever.
Yeah. Remember when we were talking to Javier about this in Istanbul? Yeah. Just how, but it isn't easy. I mean,
no, of course not. Scopely has so many dead bodies. What was it, the Temple Run match 3? You remember that?
Oh my God.
Stories. I have stories.
Yeah, player fantasy, right? Or brand fantasy. Yeah.
I was on that project.
Oh, you were? Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah. That one got batted around quite a bit.
Oh, I watched it from the seat next to the person, and yeah, that was a painful one. Okay. We have one final story. I think it's pretty quick. Since we talked about it earlier, let's just knock it out. Laura, why don't you talk about Neil's article around celebrity partnerships?
So this is specifically around Kim Kardashian. So, and expands into celebrity partnerships, but it's, why did Kim Kardashian, the game, succeed when others failed trying to replicate that success? So one of the top grossing games back in the 2010s was Kim Kardashian Hollywood. It was pulled from the store back in January. Sensor AI reports about $252 million in lifetime revenue, but insiders reported over $600 million in lifetime revenue. It's a pretty big difference. Just a quick refresher. So Blammo Games made Stardom Hollywood in a publisher deal with Glue. So they wanted to beef up organics to a game that was already showing probably pretty sticky, some pretty good KPIs. So they decided to add an IP, and who better than Kim Kardashian? It was re-released then as a year later with Kim as the star character. Now, she got very involved. I think that is one of the key takeaways from this. She did voice recordings. She gave ideas on story. And then she allowed the game to follow her real life. So if Kim was jet setting off to, you know, Paris Fashion Week, they would match that in the game. It was very much a partnership. So Kim's social media had like full support of this game. So she was also using all of her channels to promote it. And this is what the question of the article is celebrities were like, ooh, that sounds great. I want lots of money. So Taylor Swift, Britney Spears, Katy Perry, Jason Statham.
He had his own mobile game? No, he did not. What did he do? Shoot people?
It was not a crash game.
What the fuck was
it? It was a shooter.
It was a shooter. Oh my God. All right.
Even Kanye wanted to get in on the action, but none of this really materialized or saw the same success. And Demasi is a couple ideas on why. So he cites lacks the restless celebrities kind of lacked the personal touch. It sounded like in Taylor Swift's example, she had her managers and agents kind of dealing with the game teams, whereas Kim was full on involved. And there was one also story about how Nicki Minaj didn't want to put anything there was like some drama that she didn't want replicated in the game, but that was in the news. That's how you get people excited about this. And as I read this article, my first question was, Jen, has this wave of celebrity partnerships has passed, or are studios picking the wrong celebrities? So what do you think?
We are in a different world. And I think we covered when Kim Kardashian went away. So if EA bought Glue, and then sadly, if your game ends up at EA Mobile, you know, the chance of it dying is higher than it was if it was not at EA Mobile, sadly. I know that they have new leadership on that team, and I really hope that they can find a way to make some of these Pepe. I know Chris has given me.
We like Pepe Contos.
Yeah, Pepe's great.
He's a former Scopely guy. Yeah.
I just wish EA would figure out how to give it some sort of priority. What do you want to say, Chris? I know you want to say something. Your face is, if you're watching on video, you would say.
Every single piece of evidence is showing that EA is doing the exact opposite of what you're suggesting, right? So it's like,
oh, I am saying I wish they would.
A hope is not a method. Wishing is not going to make it true. Like, mobile is dead at EA, basically, is what's happened, right? And they're going to focus on fucking FIFA, and they're going to focus on, I don't know, that's it.
Madden.
You know, like, dude, it's over, right? I mean, you, anybody from EA, come call me and tell me how I am wrong on this. Like, it's insane. Absolutely insane. Like, insane, like, what's going on over there.
And it breaks my heart because there are still so many people there that are great people that have been there a long time that know how this works, could actually do something, but it's just not prioritized. And I wish it was. So I say all this to say that EA let Kim Kardashian's game die. And that makes me incredibly sad because this was the shining light of celebrity integrations. I don't think you can have a singular game with a singular celebrity anymore. We have moved on to collaborations. So if you think about, you know, remember when we were kids, well, Cress and I, when we were kids, there were only like a handful of TV stations, and then there was cable, and now you have hundreds of stations, and now there's TikTok, and people aren't even watching cable anymore. So the same thing has happened with the idea of celebrities in games, where Kim, what the reason why this game was so successful is, like you said, it's the integration with her life. It was the integration with her social. She organically promoted this game as part, and she was actively involved in it. And that's what made it work. So in today's world, it just doesn't happen like that anymore. And people's attention is across so many different things. There is not one person you can go to and get that broad audience like you could with Kim Kardashian. So collaborations inside of games with events is the way to go. In fact, I think Nicki Minaj even did a Call of Duty collaboration. I think she was running around with a pink gun and a pink outfit. That's the future. Brands and celebrities are doing limited time events where you can, everyone can participate for a limited time and still get a revenue bump, but it doesn't have to be a dedicated game. And you see that with the, you know, the Island of Misfit Toys of all the past examples that you gave. So my verdict is no more individual games. I mean, the only one who could probably pull it off would be Taylor Swift. What they did in the past was like a social, it like wasn't her music. It was like a really poorly done. It didn't live up to the fantasy of Taylor Swift. So it was like, I'm going to like be on her social media, not I'm in her life seeing all the drama of how she writes songs and how she, I'm not a Swiftie, I have to admit, but what I hear from Swifties is it is about how she authentically tells the story of her feelings that touches every person. It the core emotional experience. And if that was a game, which I don't really think it is, that's why I'm like, if the only one who could be it would be her, but I don't even think that's her. I don't think you can do that with any singular celebrity anymore. So please, game teams, go do limited time events all day long. Do that. Don't make a dedicated game with a singular celebrity. That's my verdict. I'm done.
All right.
All right, we're going to wrap it up here. Thanks for the extra long episode. No more Embracer talk for a while. And see you next week.
You did it. You made it to the end of the episode. As a fan of the show, it would help us out if you subscribe and leave us a review on the podcast service of your choice. More importantly, are you a member of the Deconstructor of Fun Slack group? If you have 5 years or more of games industry experience, go to deconstructoroffun.com/slack and apply to join. Join the games industry's best professional community, filled with peers always willing to lend a hand. Or subscribe to our newsletter to get all the latest insights from the Deconstructor of Fun content creators. Thanks for listening.